Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for your consideration today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good. A new poll from CBS News trying to get the sense from Americans what they think about enhanced interrogation techniques in light of the report released by Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee last week. And the results are not overwhelming in one direction or another, which is probably a good thing since it is a complicated subject, both legally and morally sometimes. But this new poll from CBS News shows that more than half, 57%, think that such interrogation tactics provide reliable information that helps prevent terrorist attacks at least some of the time. 52% of Americans think the release of information regarding the CIA interrogation tactics pose a threat to U.S. security, i.e., they never should have made this report public. It should have been handled behind closed doors. A large majority do think things like waterboarding and threatening to assault a detainee's mother do constitute torture. So it is a complicated subject, but Americans do see the national security benefit here, especially when they see the CIA director saying this did give us information and it did keep us safe.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You can be morally divided about the actions taken by the CIA and by the United States after 9/11. I still have a lot of problems with the Senate report and the way it was done. Obviously, completely deciding to shut out the entire Republicans on the committee. The fact that this was basically rushed out the door or put out the door right before Feinstein was no longer the committee chair. And just kind of a general smugness coming off that, particularly if it's the number of times Congress was briefed and the number of times they're now being able to say, oh, I had no idea this was going on, and if I had known about it, I would have stopped it and stuff like that. I mean, this is a great deal of moral preening here. I think my colleague Jonah Goldberg put it pretty well when he says, I believe torture is always wrong, but I also think reality gets a vote, which is to say that what is your purpose of torture? We always talk about the ticking bomb scenario, and people who vehemently oppose torture, even John McCain would say, well, actually, in a ticking bomb scenario, that's different. And the question was, well, how do you know when it's a ticking bomb scenario or not? Again, to a much more gray area of this. Every person who likes to, you know, wag their finger at the CIA now and wag the finger at this really seems to enjoy their moral superiority of this, knowing that there were not devastating subsequent attacks after 9/11, although I no doubt that there were a bunch of attacks and things that were certainly would meet my definition of terrorism that people kind of decided to put down the memory hole. You know, how many people are you willing to see die because the interrogations didn't work fast enough? I think it's one thing to talk about this in the abstract. It's another thing to talk about it with real life terrorism threat still bearing down on us, kind of foreshadowing our second martini here. And I'm kind of struck by the fact that the Senate Democrats have no problem making a giant stink about the interrogation methods after 9/11. But apparently it's perfectly morally okay to kill innocents in the process of drone striking terrorists. If you want to say waterboarding is mean, KSM is mean, it's bad, it's not something we should do in our name, okay. If the U.S. said, you know what, we're breaking out the rack and all the other medieval torture devices, I think a lot of us would say, wait a minute, that's not consistent with our values. That's not how we see ourselves. We don't want to do that. But having said that, I mean, we kill kids in drone strikes. Is that consistent with who we are? You don't hear any coverage of that. You don't hear much discussion of that. There's a couple of human rights groups, and you can dispute their numbers. They're putting the number of children killed in drone strikes up at around 400 or so. Let's say they're overestimating that by a factor of two. That's still 200 dead children, okay? So given a choice between 200 dead children versus waterboarding KSM, I know which one I find morally objectionable. I just don't understand why Senate Democrats and the media don't see things the same way. And I'm kind of glad that this polling result indicates a good portion of the public is just not buying into this narrative.
Well, there certainly is still the threat in the world, as you mentioned. It does foreshadow our second martini. And, of course, terrorist attacks on American soil are the ones that shock our conscience most because we're Americans. But in the wake of 9/11, we were very much horrified by the Spanish train bombings, by the London bombings on the 7/7 date in 2005, and other events that have just really shaken Western civilization to the core. And one of our great allies in this fight over the past decade and a half has been the Australians. They've had their own drama play out over the past day or so. And just as we're starting to record this, it looks like the police have stormed this cafe in Sydney, where this man has been holding customers hostage for the better part of a day. We don't know exactly what the result of that storming of the cafe has been. Until that point, we don't think there were any casualties inside. There were a few hostages that were able to escape. Police did identify the man behind the siege as an Iranian cleric named Manharan Monis. I don't know if that's exactly how you pronounce it, but so once again, we kind of know the derivative of the terrorism that's going on here, Jim, and we'll see how it exactly unfolds. But it's once again a stark reminder that not only is terrorism alive and well in the Middle East, it's not confined to the Middle East.
By the way, as we're speaking, I am seeing some media reports saying, quote, the gunman is down, unquote. Still no word on casualties, but this happened last night, our time. Reports of he had taken hostages in this chocolate shop, and he put up a flag to the window. He made the hostages hold a flag up to the window, and there was a lot of debate about whether or not it was an ISIS flag. And somebody said, well, it's kind of like an ISIS flag, but it's got a different portion of the Quran on it, so it's not the official ISIS flag, as if it really mattered, in the sense that, like, look, if you take hostages and you put up a black flag with Arabic lettering of it, of the Quran, I think we have a good sense of what your motivation is, all right? You are an Islamist terrorist. You're not doing this because you think those colors are neat, okay? You're not doing this because you're really upset about the prices of chocolate in the store. This is Islamist terrorism, and there are people who are absolutely adamant that they not look at it that way. The next immediate reaction was, heaven forbid this lead to anti-Muslim violence, when there is actual anti-non-Muslim violence going on in Sydney. It appears things are going okay. We're now getting reports of 3 or 4 people injured. Well, obviously, look, by the time this podcast airs, we're going to know a great deal more about this. But the knee-jerk refusal to acknowledge that this would be Islamist terrorism is another frustrating aspect of our thinking in this. It's a refusal to address reality as it is in this world.
Again, we'll be following that, and it could very well end up being a martini tomorrow or later in the week. On to the crazy one now, Jim. And it was just a number of days ago we were talking about how folks protesting the grand jury decisions in Staten Island and Ferguson, probably not your best tactic to lie down in the middle of major thoroughfares during rush hour to get people over to your side of the debate. And apparently we've got another example of this, this time not in the United States. This report from the New York Times, President Ollanta Humala of Peru criticized the environmental group Greenpeace on Saturday for not respecting his country's archaeological heritage, as authorities said they intended to seek criminal charges against several activists who damaged the fragile desert around the Nazca lines. Greenpeace stirred up a storm of controversy in Peru last week after a group of about 12 activists on Monday entered a protected area around the famous lines to place a sign promoting renewable energy on the ground. The Nazca lines were created over 1,000 years ago and include enormous figures of birds, mammals, and geometric shapes etched into the earth. And basically, it's kind of a dusty dirt-type area, and with all these activists trudging in there, it's going to mess up these remarkable etchings that have been in the dirt for a millennium. But Jim, here we go. Let's protect the environment by trashing a pristine part of the environment that's been that way for 1,000 years.
Greg, this grabbed me like few stories have. And I'll say, look, first of all, I know a lot of people wanted to forget Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, the fourth movie, but this was in there, right? He talks about there are these giant etchings on the ground that are not visible from the ground, but they're drawn to be really amazing to somebody high above. Of course, they didn't have the capacity for flight back then, or did they? But it's one of the great, fascinating archaeological treasures and mysteries of the modern era and of this region. And these numbskulls at Greenpeace trudge all over it because they want to put this day-glow neon yellow sign saying, save the environment. You idiots are destroying the environment. And this is just the most smug, arrogant, self-destructive action in a long history by an organization that puts publicity and their own egos above the actual stated objectives. It's absolutely frustrating. Greenpeace, I hate these guys. The Nazca lines belong in a museum. And frankly, it's too bad the Javitos don't know Greenpeace the way we do.
Jim, I agree with everything you said except for the first reference. I'm unfamiliar with a Indiana Jones movie set there. As far as I'm concerned, the franchise ended with Indiana Jones and his father riding out of the Middle East after finding the Holy Grail.
There were only three. I understand that. It was a really good James Rollins novel. That's what it was, a book that they never made it to a movie. That's the way to think of it, Greg.
Sounds good. But yes, on the serious side, that is despicable, and hopefully they pay a stiff price for that. Jim, we'll stop there for today. We'll talk again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.